He never ruled an empire. He left behind no fortress or tomb, and yet his name has survived 2.5 millennia. From ancient generals to modern CEOs, from battlefield command posts to boardrooms, his lessons endure. In today's episode on History Unpacked, we will be talking about Sun Tzu, one of the most quoted generals in human history. But who was Sun Tzu, the elusive mind behind the art of war? And did he even exist? If you enjoy the episode, consider subscribing. We post every week and we welcome any feedback. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Our story begins in the chaos of the spring and autumn period in ancient China, around the 6th century BCE. The once mighty Zhao dynasty was crumbling. China wasn't yet a unified empire. It was a landscape of competing states locked in near constant warfare. This wasn't just an age of battle, it was an age of philosophy, when thinkers, tacticians, and visionaries were shaping the moral and political foundations of the Chinese civilization. Among them, a man named Sun Wu, better known by his honorific title Sun Tzu, or Master Sun, began to gain attention. But here's where history turns a little foggy. We don't have contemporary records confirming his existence. What we have is a biography written centuries later in Sima Xian's Records of the Grand Historian. In it, Sun Tzu is portrayed as a master strategist who earned the attention of King Heilu of Wu, a rising power in eastern China. According to legend, Sun Tzu wasn't just smart, he was also ruthless. But was he a historical figure, or a name attached to a growing body of military philosophy? The line between myth and man blurs almost immediately. One of the earliest and most shocking tales about Sun Tzu is his so-called proof of concept. When summoned by King Heilu to demonstrate his military training methods, Sun Tzu asked for 180 of the king's concubines. The king obliged, perhaps expecting a harmless spectacle. Sun Tzu split them into two companies and appointed the king's favourites as officers. He issued clear instructions, left, right, about face, laughter. He repeated the orders, more laughter. Then came the execution. Without hesitation, Sun Tzu had both commanders beheaded for failing to enforce discipline. The king was horrified, but Sun Tzu, unwavering, replied that once orders are clear, failure lies not in the general, but in the officers. He reminded the king that discipline must outweigh favoritism. On the battlefield, there is no room for emotion. It was a brutal lesson, but it worked. The remaining women followed commands perfectly. Was the story true? Historians debate it, but the lesson was unmistakable. Sun Tzu's loyalty was to order, not to power, and that made him both dangerous and indispensable. Now promoted to general, Sun Tzu helped turn the underdog kingdom of Wu into a military force to be reckoned with. His crowning achievement came at the Battle of Boju in 506 BCE, when Wu launched an ambitious invasion of its much larger rival, Chu. Outnumbered and facing better equipped forces, Sun Tzu used every tool at his disposal: psychological warfare, misdirection, night raids, and terrain manipulation. He divided his forces, feigned retreats, lured enemies into traps, and attacked at moments of maximum vulnerability. Wu's forces crushed Chu's armies. The capital, Ying, fell. Chu's king fled into exile. But what's most telling is how little we know of Sun Tzu's own presence on the battlefield. He wasn't a warlord in shining armor. He was a ghost in the machine, guiding decisions, shaping outcomes. But he didn't need to be seen to dominate. It's here that Sun Tzu's legend began to crystallize. But the most enduring legacy wasn't forged with a sword, it was written with a brush. Somewhere in the aftermath of Wu's victories, Sun Tzu put his philosophy into words. The Art of War is short, only 13 chapters, but dense with meaning. It doesn't glorify war, it seeks to minimize it. It's less about conquest and more about winning without fighting. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. To capture the enemy's entire army is better than to destroy it. Water shapes its course according to the nature of the terrain. So too a commander must adapt to circumstance. The power of the text is in its abstraction. It isn't locked to one time or one place. It speaks to strategy, not weapons, to human nature, not just battle tactics. It's no surprise that its earliest readers included politicians and philosophers as much as soldiers. And yet, the book's quiet brilliance may have sealed its author's fate. After the victories and the writing, silence. Sun Tzu vanishes from history. Some scholars believe he retired, content to let his philosophy outlive him. Others suspect he was quietly removed, his ideas seen as too dangerous to those in power. After all, he advocated the avoidance of direct conflict, the use of spies, and the manipulation of perception. Not exactly the kind of thinking most kings wanted spreading in their court. There's even a theory that Sun Tzu never existed at all, and that the Art of War was the product of generations of military thinkers compiled under one name. But regardless of who wrote it, the text endured. It became required reading in Chinese military academies and was eventually absorbed into Confucian, Taoist, and even legalist thought. The seeds were sown for a far-reaching influence that would jump continents and centuries. By the 8th century, Sun Tzu's work had reached Japan. There it influenced samurai culture, shaping the minds of generals during Japan's feudal wars. The great 16th century daimyo, Takeda Shingen, is said to have studied the text extensively, using its principles to dominate rival clans. Fast forward to the 20th century. Mao Zedong cited Sun Tzu in his guerrilla warfare tactics during the Chinese Civil War. Ho Chi Minh and General Giap used Sun Tzu's teachings in their campaign against the French, and later the Americans, in Vietnam. It was about mobility, terrain, deception, and patience. In the West, the Art of War gained traction during World War II, studied by Allied intelligence and even the OSS, the precursor of the CIA. By the Cold War, it was required reading in many Western military academies. And then came the 1980s. Sun Tzu's influence leapt from war zones to boardrooms. The same principles of strategic thinking, timing, and deception were embraced by corporate titans. Wall Street traders, Silicon Valley founders, and even NFL coaches began quoting Sun Tzu like scripture. He became the most modern of ancient figures, one who understood that control, not chaos, is the key to power. So, to conclude, how do historians know for certain that Sun Tzu was a real person and that he really wrote the book? Well, we can't, not for certain. The age we are talking about and the lack of contemporary sources make it impossible. But there is a lot of supporting evidence that does lend credence to the act that he was, in all likelihood, a real person. In 1972, a tomb was discovered in Shandong province, containing military texts that are attributed to Sun Tzu and his descendants. This does prove that the Art of War was known during the Warring States period, although of course it doesn't conclusively prove that he wrote the text. Historians have analysed the writing of the Art of War, and it does match the military and political history from that time. It's likely that just one person wrote it due to the consistent attribution of a single author, although that debate is ongoing. Sun Tzu's historical identity may remain uncertain, but his ideas attributed that to him have proven remarkably durable. Whether he was a single author or a collective voice, his strategies have shaped how leaders approach conflict planning and influence for over 2,000 years, The Art of War isn't just a military manual, it's a study of human behavior in times of pressure. And that, more than any battlefield victory, is why his work still matters.